good morning. Thank you, Chris, for having me. Thanks all for tuning in. This is a heavier topic for some, so it's important that we take care of ourselves. This is our content warning, meaning that we are going to be discussing suicide through the framework of suicide prevention. But in order to do that, we will be discussing warning signs, ways to talk to folks, et cetera. And that can be hard for you if you have experienced this yourself, if you've supported a loved one or lost a loved one to suicide. So I hope you enjoy my low budget, information in the back. I am going to post in the comments as well, but you can always call 1-800-273-8255, which is our National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, or you can text 741-741, or if you're in Howard County and you would like to call grassroots, that is 410-531-6677, okay? But thank you. Don't be scared away. It's important to talk about, but also give yourself a break if you need to.
And that's why we wanted to give that warning, is just, because we understand that we are all in different places, and I apologize, I'm moving around because my computer's just decided not to start charging right now. but anyways, it's important to give that for warning because it's heavy times. We're all going through a lot of different situations in our life, a lot of different stressors. And topics like this, sometimes we just don't feel like we want to listen in. Other times we feel like we need to talk about them. So just know that this will be on our page. So if you want to just scroll through Facebook or go onto Instagram or just keep doing whatever you were doing, you're not ready for this conversation right now, it's okay. Just come back later. It'll still be there for you. And you can access it at any time. Or if you are listening and then you're like, have somebody who I think would benefit from it, we're going to talk about that and ways that maybe you can support them. Maybe it is a good idea to send them this. Maybe you realize it's not a good idea to send them this. So we're going to cover all of that. And I want to start this conversation with the quote that the description, if you read the description, the caption on Facebook, this actually started some interesting conversations with Julie. Quote had a word in it that when talking about best practices on how to talk about suicide, it's a word that we all use when we refer to it, and it's a word that it's not in the best practices. And so the quote reads, "Did you really want to die?" And it's a quote, I'm going to read the adaptation from Tiffany De Bartolo on How to Kill a Rockstar. And it says, "Did you really want to die?" And it says, "No one takes their life because they want to die." And that's where the adaptation comes in. And then the next quote says, "Then why do they do it?" And the answer is because they want to stop the pain. So there's, a couple of things in here, Julie, that I really want to dive into. And first, the first thing is, that adaptation that we had to make to this quote so that we could use it this morning. When thinking about the best practices, when thinking about talking about suicide, a lot of people think that we should just not talk about it, period. Because if we talk about it, then we're going to give ideas or we might actually make matters worse. Is that true? Is that true? Can we talk about it in a safe manner? And what does that safe manner look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's one that I think this is maybe one of the most common myths out there about suicide and suicide prevention, that asking somebody gives them the idea. So it's not true. It's simply not true. So the unfortunate truth of the matter is that we will know about suicide at a much younger age than a lot of people might think about. And just asking somebody a question doesn't really make them consider it, right? So a goofy example I use in some of my trainings is, think about something that you value a whole lot in your world. Maybe it's your dog, maybe it's a car, maybe it's your job, a loved one, whatever, right? So think about that for a moment. And if I just say, can I have that? You're going to tell me no. You're going to tell me to get out of your face, right? And you're going to like run away with it. Now, a caveat is one time I asked this question and a lady was like, "Sure, you can have my toddler," because she was a little sleep deprived. And I was like, okay. But I'm going to go ahead and say 99.99% of the time, you're going to say no. You love that thing and you want to keep it. And the same is true of life. Even if we are struggling right now to maybe see the positive side of things, to find hope, life is precious, and it is really truly about folks that are considering suicide are really in a lot of pain. And so they're not thinking very clearly, but asking someone about it is the best way to prevent suicide. The other part that you wanted to kind of address was the adaptation, right? So the best practice is to talk without judgment, without shame. And we know that the phrase committed or commit suicide is judgmental, and it can cause people to feel shame. So we no longer say commit suicide. And I encourage you to start working on practicing this. It takes a long time. It took me about a year to reliably train it out of my language, except for, of course, I run around and tell people not to say it. So I'm I'm saying it again, but I don't say it in regular conversation. I don't say it when I'm talking to folks about this, unless I'm modeling appropriate language. So the reason being is if I say he committed, she committed, we kind of auto-complete that sentence with crime or sin or something, and we want to just avoid those negative connotations. So instead, died by suicide, took their own life, killed themselves. You can use suicide as a verb. They suicided. Sounds a little awkward, but you know, it is possible to use it as a verb. And if you mess up, it's okay. Just catch yourself, right? Like I said, it took me a year to reliably train that out of my language. I'd say commit, died by suicide, right? And it's okay, we're all human, right? So just take a beat, take a pause, think about it, and do your best.
You know, the other part of the quote that I really want to acknowledge is the pain. Because the reason that that quote really stuck with me and I chose it was that it gave me that understanding. You know, coming in as I was preparing for this conversation today, I realized that I had not equate pain with the reason of that people take their lives. I really, you know, I think that I fall more in the category of probably the people who misunderstand it. And is like, I think we think of suicide as weakness, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. And As I was reading through this, another quote that really resonated with me is like, you can be courageous to stay alive or to take your life. And I was like, wow, I mean, you know, it's a different type of courage. So, you know, I want to talk about that pain. I want to talk about, you know, that process of, and everything that somebody might be feeling and might be experiencing. And some of the warnings that people might be, you know, showing and giving us as they are maybe thinking about it or as it becomes an option that comes into their minds.
Yeah. So thank you for your honesty. I always appreciate talking with you, since you are quick to share, you know, when maybe you thought about things differently. And I always appreciate that honesty and vulnerability. So a couple of things here. So pain is all processed in the brain, right? So whether it is a broken bone or dislocated joint or you're giving birth or whatever's going on that's painful, your brain does not distinguish this from emotional pain. And so, you know, a good thought experiment is to really think back to a time that you were in a ton of physical pain. So for me, I dislocated my knee once when I was a teenager. And all I could think about were swear words. and so, you know, if somebody walks up and asks you to, you know, get back to work, to do schoolwork, take care of your family, to take a shower, to brush your teeth, to do all this kind of stuff, ask for directions, these higher level like processes, you can't do it. You can't. And so it takes an incredible amount of courage and strength to keep persevering when you're in a ton of emotional pain. And I think it's really incredibly important that we acknowledge that. Somebody that is thinking about suicide is normally somebody that has lost some of their hope. And they are in so much pain and they can't think clearly. And they're really struggling to see the way out of this, if that makes sense. And they become very focused on wanting to end their pain. So we know from research that folks are ambivalent about ending their life up to and including time of attempt, right? So this means that some part of them wants to live and some part of them wants to die. It's truly focused on the pain. And from talking to attempt survivors, most of them are very thankful that they are still here, that they said they up like at the moment were like, oh my gosh, what did I do? And so it's so important to recognize the amount of pain that folks are in, because we all can relate to this, whether you've just stubbed a toe or you've had, you know, horrible car accident or whatever, like we all can relate to pain. And so it's important to recognize that they're human beings in a ton of pain, and they need help. They need reminders about ways to deal with their pain.
And, you know, I think that that's a really important thing to know. And I love the warnings that you gave, you know, that, I mean, you just said brushing your teeth, you know, simple things that maybe we take for granted, going back and doing your work or your schoolwork. And I'm glad that you're going there, Julie, because that prompted me to think about, you know, two people who I know. One person did take her life. She was 13. And then another person who I know who tried to take his life, but did not succeed. And he was 60 some years old. So age, I think it's another myth maybe out there, you know, that it's only for when you're a certain age. It's only when you're immature. It's only when, you know, there's all of this wrong ideas around suicide that come to our mind. So I want to try to just kind of like break away those ideas, yeah. And talk specifically about that, because I personally, you know, just personally know of people very, very young and also young in heart who have, you know, experienced or have thought about suicide. And like I said, one of them actually was successful, unfortunately, when she was in a very, very young age. So Is there a group? Is there an age? Is there anything like that? Is there like a pattern? Is there anything that really, where we are more susceptible maybe to suicide?
Yeah. So a couple of quick things. I didn't cover this in the language, but I want to do this now. And I know that you are always receptive to this. We no longer say failure or success, because I want you to think about that for a second and really understand what you're saying. It is not a success. It is not a failure, right? So please avoid saying that in the future. It's a death by suicide. It's an attempt, right? Those are kind of the two options. So we want to make sure that we're modeling safe language again. And I feel like I'm pulling the rug out from you. I forgot to say that at the beginning, so I apologize. Thanks for being a good sport. The other piece is, it is a really common thought that teens are at highest risk of suicide. When we break it down by age, it's actually white middle-aged men, 45 to 54 years old, is the highest rate of deaths by suicide when we break down by age and ethnicity. And that normally shocks a lot of people. It's closely followed by 85 and up year olds, so the elderly. And teens are actually much lower down the list. Now, that being said, teens are more likely to think about suicide, to experience suicidal ideation, but they are less likely to die by suicide. Now, please do not be like, oh, well, let's go check up on only white middle-aged men. Suicide doesn't look like anything, right? So you just have to be really careful. You're not looking for a particular type of person or a particular trait about somebody. What you're looking for in general is stuff that just indicates that maybe they've lost a little bit of hope and that they're really in a lot of emotional pain. And that pops up really differently for a lot of people. You can normally see it in the way they're talking or not talking, in their behaviors and their overall mood.
Thank you for correcting me, because, you know, like you said, I read, you know, the safe reporting, and I've been trying to be really, really mindful of it. But like you said, it's a process, because we hear it, you know, we hear this commonly every time that we talk about suicide, we hear all of those words. I mean, as I was reading it, I was like, oh my gosh, but this is every word that I'm so used to using when I talk about suicide or when I hear news about suicide. So it is a change of mindset. It's a change of language. It's a change of how we look at it, quite honestly. So thank you for coming. I'm very appreciative of that, because it just brings a lot more awareness to me that, yes, I need to be more careful in how I'm talking about it, but at the same time, I should not stop talking about it, because it is important. And maybe if I start that conversation, that will encourage somebody who's thinking about it to open up, or to search for help. You know, if they're thinking about it, if they're not comfortable talking to me, which is okay, maybe they will seek that person that they're comfortable with talking, and you know, start having other thoughts, and other options other than suicide. Wow, you know, like the statistics, that's pretty incredible. I am definitely blown away by that. How common, Julie, is it really for people to think about suicide?
It's actually really common. And I'm so glad you asked that. And people are normally really shocked by this statistic as well. So the statistic is 1 in 20 people in any given 2 week period are thinking about suicide. So that's 5% of our population. When I give trainings or talk about this in my psychology classes and stuff, normally I have more than 20 people in the room, right? And so when I say that, I normally just kind of stop and look around and go, you know, I think there's more than 20 of us in this room right now, right? So that normally kind of blows people's minds a little bit. So it's actually really common to consider suicide. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you are going to intend, right? It doesn't mean that you're going to make a plan. It doesn't mean that you're going to attempt. It doesn't mean that you're going to die. And honestly, thoughts about suicide are kind of like almost natural, obviously not ideal, right? But the commonality of it, I think, is important to acknowledge, because I certainly see, well, on a normal day, I would see more than 20 people in a day. And it's a good reminder to really be observant and kind and empathetic as possible, so that you can help connect with somebody if they need it. And that doesn't mean that you're going to like count off and be like, oh, the first 19 people aren't and this one is, because we know that certain groups of people may be more likely to think about suicide or whatever. So don't get caught up again on statistics and what it looks like, with air quotes here. You want to be just very mindful that it is common, and that you can help them realize that it's common and there's no shame in it.
I, you know, if I can share a personal experience, I had a relationship at some point, and I remember I was very young. I was very clingy. I was, you know, and so I remember one time I said, if you leave me, I'm going to kill myself, right? Mm-hmm. Well, a couple of things that I want to talk about that with you is, you know, one, what did that really mean, right? Because I was certainly not thinking about suicide or anything like that, but I said that, right? But then the other thing is, recognizing, you know, the attitude of the other person, because I know that that was used against me. And I know that now, but I didn't know that at the time. Somebody else had to help me see that. Let's talk about that, because I think that, you know, many times we say, oh my gosh, I'm going to kill myself, or oh my gosh, I'm going to, like, we say this thing sometimes, but we don't really mean it. So if you're overhear somebody say that, I guess, as a friend, as a person who cares or loves somebody, how can we recognize when that is just something that we blur out without real meaning behind it, and when is it something that we really maybe need to worry about and concern about and help? I don't know if help is even, you know, like the right word to say, if we need to take action, I guess, is what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah. So again, this is one of my favorite things to talk about. There's a couple of things. So I'll answer your question first and then come back to your story. So you don't know until you ask someone. So you should always take action. You should always follow up on that. You said that if this doesn't happen or whatever, you're going to kill yourself. Does that mean you're thinking about suicide? I mean, just short, simple, sweet, and asking, because you cannot assume. I have a friend that made jokes about suicide, just kind of similar things like, you know, hey, if I'm not here tomorrow, this stuff is over here, that kind of stuff. And I remember being like, this just doesn't feel right. Like, I just don't. I don't like this. Like, don't say this, right? And it wasn't until I went back and talked to them that they shared, you know, oh, wow, I didn't realize I was saying that a lot. And I didn't realize that I was in pain. Average individuals that are talking, and I recognize that it's kind of mainstream, or even you might meme about it or whatever, to talk about being in a lot of depression or suicide. And I really, really don't like these memes and jokes and things. And I would encourage you to stop using them because it can be confusing to other people, can be flippant if somebody is actually thinking about suicide and somebody's making jokes about it. And, you know, honestly, it's a lot of work. I know that this comes across this way, but like, it's a lot of work to ask every single person that makes a joke about it, are you really thinking about suicide or are you just saying that? And so you want to just kind of work to train that out of your language if possible, because it'll help reduce the stigma and allow people to connect to help, and get them a little bit closer to feeling better overall. If I can come back to your story, this is something that parents often ask me when I do trainings and they're worried about their teenagers. They're like, oh, my teen just says stuff, right? And so, you know, she doesn't mean it or he doesn't mean it. Again, you have no idea until you actually ask the human being that is making these statements, are you thinking about suicide? And so sometimes people will write teenagers off and say they're just attention seeking. So I want to share a quote, which is the teens that need love the most will ask for it in the most unloving of ways. This really changed my perspective and how I was working with teenagers back in the day when I did. And it reminded me that folks that are in pain are not going to communicate clearly and are not going to be able to tell you, I need this, I need that, right? Because they're struggling. And so the only way they know how is to say things that are impulsive or angry or lash out or do stuff that might be destructive. And that's a really big indicator that they might need some help. So again, take nothing as a joke. I know that sounds very tiresome, but your friends will learn. My friends have learned. I don't tolerate that kind of stuff. So I'll say, I don't find that funny. And they're normally like, oh, oops, right? It just takes a minute. So you can have the full conversation the first couple of times, you know, and then I just don't find that funny. Or if you continue to ask people if they're thinking about suicide every time they make a joke, they get a little tired of that too. And so they'll also kind of slow down on making jokes and things. So I encourage you to help clear the air, right? So it's not, suicide's not funny. We shouldn't be making jokes about it. We shouldn't be making flippant statements, but sometimes that's the clearest way people know how to ask for help. And it's not necessarily that they're thinking about suicide. They're just telling you, I'm really struggling right now and I'm going to joke it off. Because it releases some of that pain and somebody giggles. And so you feel connected and that's also kind of healing, but it's not the long way. It's not the right way or the right long-term way to make change and to start feeling better.
You know, one thing that we can all agree is COVID came and brought a whole bunch of different things with its own that we were not prepared for, right? Has it made any difference when it comes around suicide? Are there statistics specific to COVID that you guys are finding?
Yeah, so statistics do take a long time, like about a year and a half or 2 years to accurately count things. So it's too early to say if there's been a change in deaths by suicide. There's a couple of things we can talk about. So the CDC did a poll of teenagers in the summer, and they found that 1 in 4 teenagers had seriously considered suicide in the last month of August. And that is an astonishingly high number. So teens in particular are more susceptible to the impacts of social isolation, meaning that they really need their peers. And this is developmentally normal, right? So they need their friends. And it's not enough to just text them. And so, you know, always follow guidance, but it is really important for teens to meet up with their friends and to hang out with them. And so I think we're starting to see a lot of people feeling trapped and disconnected or isolated from others, which can be warning signs and risk factors for suicide. The plus side of all of this is that we have tons of technology and like video chats like this, right? So you can still interact with people, and this is better than text, although not the same as being in person, right? So there's kind of different levels. And, you know, we can play video games together, you can do Twitch streams, like all sorts of stuff to stay connected and make sure you're taking care of your health. But the other part of this is that you can't rely on one coping strategy to get through this. I mean, we're like 7 months in now. And if you're still limping along with one coping skill of like taking a bubble bath every time you get stressed, you must be exceedingly clean at this point in time. But also, you need multiple tools in your tool belt or in your toolkit. So it's important to maintain like baseline stress, but then also be prepared for when the stress goes up and down. It's really, really important that we are checking in on people, having those real conversations, and following up on stuff. Hey, I haven't heard from you in a couple of days. Is everything okay? Easy as that, right? And theoretically, if you're talking to them, you care about them in some way, shape, or form. So it's not invasive. And it might be scary to lead the charge, so to speak, but it really makes a lot of ripple effects in your friend group. And I'm calling them out right now. But again, my friends know that I will ask, awkward questions, and I will always follow up on those jokes. And I will say that I don't find it funny, or, hey, we really shouldn't use that kind of language. And, I know that doesn't make me sound like the most fun at a party, and I'm okay with that, because, people know that they can always come talk to me about their feelings.
So, Julie, and I apologize for everybody. I am trying to switch between my phone and my computer as my computer charger decided to just not work today. And, it's a heavy topic to talk about. And it's something that as a mom, I can certainly say that I have experienced. I have seen what you just talked about with the kids and the loneliness and, what they're feeling. And this comes from a child who is not necessarily very social. This comes from the child who is super social. I've seen both realms here just in my house. And every little opportunity, they savor it so much when they have those little interactions, even if it is with all the social distancing and all of these new things, right, that we have to just kind of like incorporate and get used to in our lives. How can we support, our youth? How can we support everybody that's out there? How can we support our loved ones right now? Because, right now, obviously, my kids are the ones who came to my mind. But I know for many couples, maybe they're not working, they're not going to work. So they haven't really been with friends or with anybody in a very long period of time. And as you said, if you're just using one mechanism of coping, depending on what that coping mechanism is, it might not be working anymore. It might not be sufficient anymore, because it's different to have to cope with just the stress of the day with being home for so many, many, many months, right? So what are some ways in which we can support each other at home today as we continue to think about, getting through COVID, and maybe we're experiencing ideas of suicide and things like that.
Yeah. So I want to be clear. I certainly have not figured this all out. I have definitely struggled myself with like feeling lonely. I'm really extroverted. Normally I get to fill my cup up by seeing all my lovely students' faces and talking with them and chatting with my colleagues and stuff on campus and doing trainings and all that. And I didn't realize how much I used to visit Target before the pandemic. I think I was probably in there probably like two times a week, because I just really enjoyed kind of wandering around. There was a really interesting study done that said that our random interactions with strangers are seems so weird. Those really quick, like, hey, like wave or smile, or like quick conversation about nothing at the cash register or in the elevator or whatever. These are things that actually really fill up your like social interaction cup, which I found really interesting. And so I thought about that a lot. And this two weekends ago, where I was really like feeling lonely, and my boyfriend is very introverted. And so he works out of the house. And so he's done. He's like, no, thank you. And I'm sitting there like, yay, a person, and so we've been working on rebalancing our relationship as well, just not like in a negative way, but I need to relearn, how to not overwhelm him when he comes home, because I'm so excited to see him. And he needs to also kind of stretch outside of his boundaries and get a little bit used to being overwhelmed a little bit. And so we've come up with like doing date nights. So like real human connection stuff at home, right? So we go pick up takeout, come home, We dragged a guest room mattress downstairs and put it on the floor in front of the TV, and we have like our open air fort because we didn't put a blanket over it, but we like put all these pillows and stuff, and we watch a movie with popcorn and eat takeout and stuff. And so we're together, we're spending time together, something we didn't used to do. And so we're being more precious about quality time, if that makes sense. So that is an excellent way to do this. We all have a tendency to be on our phones, right? So when you are with people, especially now, put those away, put them away, because you need to like bring out everything from your social interactions as much as possible. I encourage you to wave at people because they can't really see you smile behind a mask, right? I encourage you to say hello, good morning, how are you doing? Even though everybody's going to lie and be like, fine, how are you, right? So, but these kind of things are really important. So that time that I was feeling lonely on the weekend, I was thinking about it, and I went to Home Depot and I wandered around the plant section a little bit, but I also just said hello to everybody as I wandered through the store. I just needed other humans. And so was I probably weird and stood out a little bit? Yeah, but I also probably, you know, that's what I needed. And these folks probably also were like, oh, that person said hello to me, you know? And we have a weird, like, mind your own business mindset here in America. And so I would argue that's pretty much out the window right now, because we are so starved for human connection and contact. And even if you're lucky enough to live with a lot of people, you're probably real sick of them at this point. you know, there are some people that I've talked to and they had like just moved in together like a couple of weeks before COVID like really hit. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I cannot imagine trying to navigate a new relationship on top of like all the COVID stress. But I mean, if you've made it this far, you're probably good to go, right? I mean, you've made it through a really tough time. So this is a really long-winded way of saying check in on people. Don't discount the stranger interactions that you might have. If you're starting to feel lonely, just go to the store and wander around. Don't touch stuff, but unless you need to, but you know, just wander around and say hello, right? And you know, buy your one thing that you didn't really need from the store. I've been doing a lot of like concentrated store trips where I'll get half of what I need because I know that I need more human interaction later in the week.
And, you know, I think that that's, I feel like every time we talk about checking in, right? Checking in with yourself, checking in with others. And I think that that's one of my favorite things that I always take away from the conversations that I have with you. So we, you know, we said, you know, enjoy that extra time with other people. That's a good way to kind of like take care of others and check in with them. How do we check in with ourselves? You know, how do we take care of ourselves through these times? And how I guess maybe, you know, what are some things that we should be aware of when thinking of suicide? If that might give us, you know, like a red flag, because we just talked about some of the red flags that we should look in other people. Maybe it's not as easy to recognize because we're talking about ourselves, right? So what are some of the things that we should be looking at and kind of like recognize within ourselves, and how do we take care of ourselves?
Yeah, good question. So you might laugh, or whoever might laugh at this. I do check-ins with my, like formal journal check-ins with myself on a weekly basis. It's actually the start of my day planner, but you can set an alarm on your phone or something. And it's like, how did last week go? What went well, what didn't go well, what would you like to do this week? And those three simple questions, it maybe takes me like a minute or something to go through them. Maybe sometimes I've had a harder week and I really need to reflect on how that week went. I would argue a week is a long time if you're new to doing this. So maybe just a quick reflection at the end of the day or every other day or something is a good place to start. Then you can expand it out a little bit more. But I really, truly do. I know it sounds goofy. I really do like little audit checks on myself. How did last week go? And I think about it and I'm like, oh, well, you know, I felt really tired, you know, a couple of days out of the week. And so then I sit there and I think about, did I get my 8 hours of sleep? Did I get outside and did I move around? Did I drink enough water? Did I eat food with enough nutrients? Did I... Right. Or did I just eat like brownies and popcorn and chips and queso? Because that's what I've been getting into as my stress eating snacks. And so there isn't anything inherently wrong with stress eating. Just be real clear, since, you know, we've talked about this before previously. You know, there isn't anything wrong with using food as a coping skill. It is problematic if that's what you do always. Right. And so don't worry if you suddenly are eating a larger amount of brownies than usual or whatever. You know, if you're truly worried about it, try doing another coping skill before heading for the brownies. But eat the brownies, man. Like, we've got to cope how we've got to cope. So I'm not going to tell anyone to turn away from coping skills unless they're turning, like, unless it's actually damaging yourself. So something like alcohol or drugs could be potentially damaging, and we want to avoid using those as a coping strategy if possible. For check-ins with yourself, I really just think about how my day went or how my week went. Was I really stressed today? Was I tired? You know, what's going on? Other like sneakier signs are feeling like the world is against you. So like no matter what you do, you feel like you can't get ahead. So that's that feeling of hopelessness, and it can kind of show up in a lot of different ways. I know that I've been talking to my students, and a couple of them are giving me little warning flags about they're feeling really hopeless. And so I've been checking in with them, not necessarily super overtly, but just, you know, hi, how are we doing today? What's going on? You know, what coping skill are we using today? And I've been real transparent about, I was really lonely, or I felt burnout the other day, or I was really stressed, so I didn't grade your work. I'll do it tomorrow, right? But giving ourselves so much grace and permission to take breaks, to take it easy, to listen to what we need to do. I encourage you to take all email notifications off your phone. I did that immediately when coming home. I think I made it 24 hours and I was like, nope, you can't like get me all over my house. You can get me when I'm in my office or if I choose to open up my Gmail app or whatever and look at that. But just being really clear about boundaries with other people. If you do start to feel hopeless or the world is against you or like you just are in a lot of pain and you're struggling, talk to someone about it, right? And it doesn't have to be a friend, although it could be. You could also call the lifeline or text the lifeline. You could talk to your primary care doctor. You could go talk to a therapist. You could go to a hospital. It kind of depends on what you're feeling. And I can't answer that for you because that's you, right? Although you're certainly welcome to reach out to me on Instagram or something like that. If you have questions, I just want to be clear. I can't do like crisis intervention 24/7, but if you have questions about a friend or a loved one or something else, you are encouraged to reach out to folks that are in the field and ask them. And I've done many podcast interviews with you on a whole variety of topics. I encourage you to go check those out as well. You know, the last one on resilience, I think is really important for a lot of people to listen to, especially right now, and be a blanket burrito if you need to.
And know that you're being resilient that way. If that's what you're using to cope and to get, you know, to kind of like clear your mind and get your strength to just get through the day. So, which is something I learned through a conversation. I think we have a different meaning for that. And again, like Julie said, go back and check those podcasts out because there is a lot of great information. And believe it or not, there's a lot of permission to be okay with where you are today. The message always with Julie's conversations is that whatever you are today, you're allowed to be there. It's okay. Don't feel pressured to really be anything else. Just know if you're staying there for too long to reach out for help, because it's definitely something that we don't want. We don't want you to just stay there. Like Julie said, you know, if today you're stressed and you want to have two brownies, go ahead and have them. But if you're stressing all the day and that's all you're having, then yes, maybe it's time to go and check in with somebody else and have that conversation and find other strategies that can help you cope and kind of figure out where that stress is coming from. Julie, let's remind everybody, I know you have the visual there behind you, but let's just remind everybody where they can reach out for help, you know, via phone, via text, and even on the email.
Yeah. So the Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255, you can call them and you also can use, I think, Facebook chat to chat with them, which is kind of nice. You can text 741-741, which is the crisis text line. They're great. It is text. Any text-based communication is just going to be a little bit slower. It's not as fast as, you know, a conversation. So keep that in mind. If it's more urgent, it's, you know, call. 211 in Maryland will connect you to a ton of different resources. So if you feel like life is getting you down because you're experiencing a lot of barriers or significant life things, you can call 211 and kind of a one-stop shop where you can get access to food pantries, a homeless shelter, domestic violence shelter, like all sorts of stuff. And also the Maryland Lifeline number, which I don't typically give out just because I can't remember it. One, and two, there's so many other ones that you can call. They're national, and I always hesitate if you're not from Maryland, right? Or if you're giving it to somebody not in Maryland, it's better to call the national line. Grassroots here in Howard County has the hotline, there we go, 410-531-6677. They're great. Hi, if you're listening from Grassroots, highly recommend them. And you can always start with your primary care doctor, always. They are an excellent gatekeeper. Many of my friends are treated for depression or anxiety or whatever else through their primary care doctor. So they didn't have to go to a psychiatrist if you're worried about that. That being said, if you don't respond to like that first medication or whatever with your primary care doctor, they're going to send you to a psychiatrist because the psychiatrist is the expert. So it's not any sort of like, oh, you're, you know, really complicated. No, it's that the doctor recognizes their boundaries and says, that's all I got. This is my recommendation. If that doesn't work, then we need to transfer you to an expert. Not because you're complicated, but because I don't know enough because I have to specialize in everything. So primary care doctors, you can call a therapist. Some of them are doing in-person meetings. Some of them are doing Zoom. Some are doing phone calls, right? So you can just shop around and find something that works. Do give them like two or three sessions before you decide if you like or hate them. It takes a little bit of time to get to know somebody. Shepherd Pratt is doing urgent care. Shepherd Pratt is a mental health hospital. This is the Towson campus. So you might have to drive a little bit, not too far. But they're doing both virtual and walk-in urgent care, which is a new thing. Typically, you're told to go to the ER. They have an urgent care situation that you can walk in or do a, I guess, phone call or Zoom meeting. And that's within 24 to 48 hours. So that's a nice response time. And, you know, there's just so much out there. So really, it's what you need. A good fallback is always the 1-800-273-8255. And then if it's more life situations, 211 for Maryland.
And the text line 741-741, that's the other number that Julie has behind her. Thank you everybody so much for listening, for watching. Thank you, Julie, for all this great information. Please do have a conversation. Maybe you don't have to be thinking about suicide, you know, to
reach out for help. You are always encouraged if you are feeling overwhelmed to out. You don't have to wait for it to reach a crisis point, basically. Here's Chris again. Okay.
I am back. I don't know if we're live on Facebook. You're seeing my, I believe we're still live on Facebook, which is great. I apologize. This, you know, it's just technology for you. My computer decided to work with us for most of the time. And just for the end of the conversation, I was like, okay, I'm done. This is enough. But no, you know, it really is. It's such an important thing. It's such an important conversation. We are experiencing really unprecedented times. I mean, we did not know COVID until it decided to just show up and be like, hey, I'm here. And now you are dealing with me on a daily basis for a little while, right? And you know, it brought at the beginning, I think that a lot of fear. But at the same time, we thought that it was going to just be here with us for a little bit and then go away. And surely enough, it's been a good number of months and we're still dealing with it, right? We still have COVID as part of our lives. Fear, I certainly continues to be a factor, not so much. I think it's more of the coping. I think it's more of the, what do we do, right? I think it's more of the, we want to move on with our lives. It's more of a frustration, I think, that people are feeling right now. And, you know, the pain that we started the conversation, the pain of not being able to move forward with our lives in the ways that we want, maybe in the ways that they were, maybe. Plus, I mean, you know, many other factors that you know, the losses of jobs and everything else, all of the other stressors that have come with COVID. So I wanted to have this conversation, one, because we just had
Suicide Prevention Month, right? It just passed. So there was a lot of conversation about it, and we didn't have the opportunity, unfortunately, to talk about it within that month. But it's still something that it's not just one month. You know, it's like we say about birthdays, like we say about Valentine's Day. It's not just that one day, right? It's not just that one day where we need to go and buy flowers for a loved one and bring them to them because they're important to us. It's something that can happen at any point. It's something that can happen at any time. And Julie and I wanted to acknowledge that. I wanted to acknowledge, first let you know that we are feeling it too. You know, we are both very honest and open when it comes to that, to saying that I wish I didn't have to wear my mask anymore. You know, when I go outside, many times I go out and I have to run back in because I forgot it. I forgot to take my mask. And I think that's just me saying, I don't want to wear it anymore, right? So we are feeling those frustrations. It's real, right? It's real, it's valid. But it is important to try to keep ourselves, I don't want to use the word strong. It's important to check in with ourselves, really, and to be honest with ourselves and to allow ourselves to have those days where we just stay in bed and watch TV or scroll through the internet all day, if that's what we need on that one day. And then to also be okay with the days where we are super productive and we are actually maybe overdoing even things, you know, we're for that one day. But recognizing if that becomes a pattern, recognizing if, you know, we're doing too much every single day to the point where it's stressing us out, or where we're just losing interest of doing things and we're staying in bed, because neither one of those two things is are healthy. And that's the point of this conversation. Wherever you are today, it's valid, it's important, it's okay. Just check in with yourself, recognize where you are, recognize if that is still healthy, if you're making the choices that are healthy, that are actually supporting you right now, or if you're making choices, or maybe if you're not making the choices, you're just feeling forced to doing those things for whatever reason. Julie, you always finish your shows with the self-care send-off, and I don't want this one to be an exception. So, you know, what are you doing right now to help you continue to, you know, just, I guess, live day by day?
Yeah. So one of my favorite kind of pieces of advice that I like to give and also practice is, you know, you don't have to wait for a new day or a new week to start over, a new month, a new year. You can choose to start over in a period of time. So I know I've talked about this before, but I've been using it a lot lately, where if I'm wallowing, or if I'm being a blanket burrito, or if I just need a minute to be like, this sucks, which is totally fine. It sucks. I'm right there with you. This sucks. And I'm going to let it suck for the next 7 minutes. And then I get up and go do something. And it doesn't have to be what I need to do, right? It just needs to be something to start that wheel turning. So sometimes it's as simple as a blanket that I have on the couch. I fold it and I put it back on the back of the couch. Maybe that I pick up that pile of clutter that I like to leave next to the stairs to take up the stairs for months on end. Maybe I pick that up and I finally take it upstairs, right? So just something. Answer an email, right? Whatever it is, do something productive. Let yourself wallow. If you miss your 7 minute mark and you need a few more minutes, that's okay. But you don't have to wait till tomorrow. You don't have to wait till next Monday. You don't have to wait till November to quote unquote get it together. That's a harmful way of thinking. And so we really just need to accept where we're at, let ourselves say this sucks, but then also not get stuck in it, right? Like we've been talking about.
You know, the one thing that I have been using to take care of myself is recognizing when too many Zoom meetings are too many and being okay with saying no. And that was difficult because that means it's harder to say no when it comes to work because, well, it's work and, you know, you can't really make those up, right? But when it comes to friends and when it comes to family, I've come to realize that I was starting to feel pressure to be in certain meetings that were happening on a regular basis. And when I allowed myself to take the pressure off that I had to be there, I've been able to savor even more the times that I've actually decided to join, because I'm looking forward to it, because I'm really excited about it. So it's okay to also say no. That's a way to take care of yourself, you know, to just be able to be honest with yourself and say, you know what, I've had enough meetings today. I've had too many things to deal with. I just need time right now to listen to Pandora, or, you know, just believe it or not, for me, doing the dishes helps me kind of like ease the stress of the day. And I put music and just, I think of myself, I guess Cobra Kai would be a better, a better show to, you know, but it's really Karate Kid that I'm thinking about, right? Where you go right and left and right and left. So as I'm scrubbing the dishes, that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, you know, kind of like soothing myself with those, with the Karate Kid moves. So, you know, just little things like that. Just, but I think it comes back to being honest with yourself, being honest with everybody else, having those boundaries that Julie was mentioning earlier. It's really, really important. And again, we can't emphasize enough, if you need help, call 1-800-273-8255 or text 741-741 and just have that conversation. And if you see somebody in your house and you're worried about them, like Julie said, and that takes a lot of courage. Ask that question. I think that's a really hard question to ask. I never had to ask the question. And I really hope that if it ever comes down to it, that I have the courage, because I, in the understanding that whatever I'm feeling, I have to get rid of it, because it's important for the other person to just go ahead and ask that question. As difficult as it might be for you to ask that question, it's important to go ahead and just do it. So anything else, Julie, that you would like to add before we close our conversation up today?
To practice asking the question to the mirror, to somebody random in a car that can't hear you, but saying the words out loud, because like you said, it is difficult to make those words come out when you need them, especially if you're feeling emotional, right? If you're worried about this person, you don't have to get rid of the feeling, but you need to tamp them down and hold space for their pain, for their conversation, for their needs. And so practice saying, is everything okay? Are you thinking about suicide, right? And just, are you thinking about suicide, is what you need to say. That is the magic phrase for you. Ask it anytime you see something out of the norm, or concerning. Trust your gut. We're really good at knowing our people. So please trust your gut. We hear a lot of times that folks talk to others, like, you've been worried about Bob. Yeah, I've been worried about Bob, but nobody talks to Bob. So please make sure somebody reaches out and says, hey, we're kind of worried about you. You haven't been showing up to stuff or whatever's going on, right? Sometimes when that happens, people are thinking about suicide. Are you thinking about suicide? And so say it until it's just like, hey, how about that weather, right? Get used to saying it so it's not a scary phrase, so that when you do need it, you can say it without freaking out on somebody.
Julie, and you know, one follow-up question to that is, what if somebody says, yes, I have been thinking? I think that if somebody says no, it's pretty easy to then kind of like take the conversation to something else. Or are you feeling any other kind of way? Like I see myself being able to handle that. But if somebody says yes, you know, what do we do?
Yeah. So normally I say, just take a beat and let that yes fill up the room or wherever you're at, right? And just go, you know, wow, thank you so much for sharing that with me. I had no idea you were struggling so much, or I had no idea you were in that much pain. And then, you know, just ask what's been going on, and then shut up. And I mean that as nicely as I possibly can. Shut your mouth, let them talk, because that's what they need. They need somebody to listen. Once they kind of unburden for a few minutes, then it's about, you know, hey, I think we need a little bit of extra help. Let's go to any of those resources we talked about earlier. Let's call the number, let's go to the hospital, let's get you to a therapist. Do you have people you're connected with already? Because a lot of people see therapists or whatever, right? So can we call your therapist together? And just move from there. I know it's really scary to hear that yes, but it's so wonderful because they trust you, right? They trust you to hold space for them and let them be connected to help.
What a beautiful way of seeing it, you know? So I guess we should all be aiming, if we ask the question, we should all hope to get that yes from the person who's thinking about it, because that just gives you a whole lot of world and trust. And you know, it's just opening the door to help somebody who's in a lot of pain and needs just a lot of support. So I think that's a good place to close our conversation today. Thank you, everybody, for, you know, bearing with me as I deal with my computer, with my non-working charger that just decided not to work for us this morning as I transitioned from my computer to my phone. And now you see what my office looks like, right? When it's not my studio. But thank you so much for allowing yourself to be here with us, for having this conversation with Julie and me, for allowing us to talk about this heavy, heavy topics that are important to acknowledge that we all can encounter in our lives, no matter how old we are, no matter where we are, no matter where we're from. I mean, it's just, you know, this is something that we can all see at some point in our lives. We can maybe all experience even at some point in our lives. And it's just important to, as Julie said, be prepared, know how to deal with it, so that we can support ourselves and support the ones that we love. So thank you so much. 1-800-273-8255 and text number 741-741. Call, text, you're worth it. And we want you to be okay. So make that phone call today. And Julie and I are here for you. If you feel that we could be of assistance, please, by all means, reach out to us via Facebook, via email, moviedoo@howardcc.edu. Julie, your information if somebody wants to talk to you.
Sure. My Instagram handle is at inquiring_minds_LLC is a great way. Or you can get me at Julie, J-U-L-I, at inquiringmindsllc.org.
Wishing everybody good mental health. As Julie says, we are signing off. Thanks so much. Have a beautiful weekend. Until next time, I am Cris Oviedo.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.